Welcome back to a fireside chat with Chilmark Research, looking at healthcare IT with a lens to the future.
Hi, I'm Jody Rank, and I'm a senior analyst with Chilmark Research. And today I'm joined with Ed Buxtel, who's been one of my go-to experts on blockchain over the years. And we're going to be discussing blockchain in healthcare, where we've been in the last few years and where we think we're going in the next 2 or 3 years and perhaps beyond. Thanks, Ed, for joining me today. And thanks to all of you for listening to our podcast today. And if you're interested in signing up for a Chilmark Research newsletter, you can go to chilmarkresearch.com. Or if you'd like to follow up with me personally after hearing this podcast, I'm at jody@chilmarkresearch.com. So Ed, you know, we last spoke about blockchain actively, publicly several years ago at the Blockchain Healthcare Summit that I used to be involved with and in helping organize, and you were a speaker participant in several rounds of that. A lot has happened. That was back during the ICO craze, which we, you know, everyone knows sort of petered out and didn't, live up to the expectations we had, but there's still some activity in blockchain in healthcare. So Why don't we begin with you giving us a little intro about your background and how you got to blockchain, and then we can get into some questions about where the market's going for the blockchain applications in healthcare.
Jody, thank you very much. And thank you also to Chilmark for hosting this. Yeah, that's thinking back to that conference in Washington, D.C., it just seems like generations ago, especially in blockchain years and what's going on in crypto. You're right. The ICO craze was in full steam at the time. And I think, you had brought on some very interesting speakers into the event talking about all things blockchain. I think you had the gentleman from Kaiser Permanente, the chief medical officer. It's taking John.
I'm blanking on his name also.
I know he had the coolest intro, and he showed a picture of himself surfing as part of the intro. And I just said, okay, maybe I should move from Philadelphia. But, you know, and I believe you also made an introduction, which is now one of the very interesting blockchain initiatives today between United Healthcare Group and Humana and folks that were speaking at the show.
You're all in the same room there.
Yeah. But, you know, just by way of background, I've been involved in healthcare for the majority of my professional life, going back about 25 plus years. Was involved in creating clinical information system standards, and as well as the standard which ended up becoming the clinical side of HL7 with the ASTM 1238 standard. But the blockchain just provided for me, and given the reference points in my career, a chance or opportunity to address some of the issues that I think some of the traditional healthcare systems and technologies were having a real problem with. And, you know, one of the chief among them was the issue of patient access, patient control, patient consent, and those and an overarching need for transparency and security. And, you know, blockchain seemed to check those boxes in a way that attracted me to the technology. And as I said, seemed to have already gone through multiple generations. The ICO craze has came and went, and we're on to bigger and better things. And I think, you know, blockchain today, as was back at the Washington, D.C. conference, and into the future, I think, you know, it's not necessarily an overarching architecture to build your systems 100% on, but I think it's a tool. Technology, much like a programmer would utilize Java, but it's a tool technology that's just kind of another arrow in your quiver to create a more robust application set.
And just to go back to that ICO era, however short-lived it was, healthcare, in contrast to some of the broader ICO offerings, where you had a lot of speculation, scam, and so forth. We actually had some companies, at least on paper, sounded quite strong. But ultimately, you know, we had issues where companies had to give back the funds, you know, raised during the ICO and so forth. Can you shed light on that? And kind of was it primarily an SEC not ready for this new way of raising capital? via the ICOs, or you know what happened? And you might, I'm blanking on some of the companies that you know we had at the conference that were doing quite well and getting quite a bit of attention, but I think a number of them are no longer in existence. And what? Why'd that happen?
Yeah, that's actually one of the most impressive companies that I saw was at the conference and first became aware of was a group that was called Simply Vital. And I believe they were out of Connecticut, and there was some affiliation, I believe, with New Haven. I think Yale New Haven Hospital. I think John Halamka was one of the advisors. And they seemed to be doing all the right things, had some very worthwhile technology to deal with value-based care. I think the CEO, she was just absolutely tremendous. Her presentations were spot on. I remember writing a blog post about it and saying, you know, we could be looking at the next Bill Gates or Steve Jobs. But, you know, I think ultimately with the ICOs, you know, the SEC didn't necessarily know how to handle it. And ultimately they came down, you know, pretty aggressively as viewing the ICOs as securities. Now, you know, with some of the really good companies like Simply Vital and Patient Tory is out there, a group out of Atlanta. Yeah, they're still alive. In fact, I think they received some traditional funding from a venture capital group out of Oregon, but they also were participating in the ICO market as well. I know the values as the ICOs kind of fizzled. I know the valuations on a lot of these companies that were ridiculous under the ICO model, those valuations definitely came down to earth. But Patient Tory is another example of a company that's still alive and kicking and doing doing some work, although not necessarily displacing the legacy vendors, Epic, Cerner's, Allscripts, eClinical Works, etc. of the world.
It's funny, we think about those valuations now, and then you look at back then, and now you look at the valuations in the traditional VC world, you know, in investments that have happened this year, and the SPACs, NFTs, and so forth. And it's funny how that, you know, we get these big swings back and forth, and you got to wonder about potentially, you know, digital health bubbles in the present and near future. But moving beyond that, I know you have been keeping up on some of the movements and activities that are still ongoing with blockchain, and some of them sound quite interesting. And, you know, maybe first begin with an example with Health and Human Services. So government using blockchain, what's going on there and how are you interpreting that?
Well, that's actually one of the more interesting examples of an actual project that made it past pilot phase and is actually operational for being able to identify the folks that are placing bids to the government and making a heck of a lot of transparency. In fact, you know, as of February 2020, they believe that they've saved about $30 million by by instituting this application. Obviously, the business case has to be in place, but this was a pet project of the former CIO Jose Arrieta, and he used a lot of the data that HHS was creating or had with regard to the proposals and bidding processes in order to basically put that information out there and make it available. It's a really interesting process. And, you know, the savings are, you know, there's the potential to create, you know, potentially billions of dollars of regulatory savings when they incorporate AI to the blockchain effort. So it's a very interesting project. And I think it's worthwhile keeping tabs on.
And I know there's some sort of regulatory changes and, you know, happenings in the pharmaceutical sector as well, in particular with the, you know, tracking and tracing. Any insights on what's going on there and sort of the pharma use cases, at least on the supply chain front?
There's a whole tracking, and I believe the regulation actually goes into effect in 2023, which is an entire program that needs to, it's mandated by the federal government. And this program is one that will make sure that the ingredients are tracked, the temperatures of products are tracked, and it's You know, it's a surveillance monitoring program that will, you know, truly be ideally suited for a blockchain technology and transparency efforts. There's absolutely no question that this will provide a heck of a lot of visibility. And I think you had a really dynamite group of folks talking about that at the conference in DC also. And I know that the ability
is one of the ones that are very active in that area. And some other, there are some startups as well, as I recall.
The issues of having transparency, being able to track the drugs throughout the entire supply chain, tracking chain of custody, you know, all of these types of issues are even more pertinent, I think, today as we have and we are still dealing with the COVID situation.
Now, fraud is also a big issue in a lot of emerging markets where you have 40, 50% of malarials I've seen in some markets are counterfeit. So I know there are a lot of use of sort of IoT labels and blockchain together to help consumers identify, authenticate essentially the medications they buy at the point of sale. So I think applications like that are really useful as well.
To track the provenance and authenticate the provenance, making sure that cold chain has not been interrupted. You know, all of these issues are absolutely critical for pharma as they come into compliance in 2023. Well, it's frankly something that the pharmaceutical companies need to be doing right now. And it will be government mandated in 2023. I was talking with a friend of mine that works with one of the big pharmaceutical companies, and apparently they were doing an inventory of all of their freezers and cold storage devices and things of that nature. And they actually found a ham sandwich in one of the devices that was meant to store medicines and vaccines. So some interesting
contaminant identification or audits.
Yes, absolutely. It's pretty crazy.
So one of the other areas I've always found quite interesting is just this general ability to collaborate across the boundaries of the firm and you know, enhance cooperation even amongst competitors, where getting them to collaborate may be win-wins for everybody. And you know, you don't have to necessarily exchange all of your data with your competitors or reveal that. Blockchain has a lot of advantages over existing methodologies, databases, and so forth, where you have different parties collaborating. Do you see anything interesting? You know, you mentioned, you know, in the intro, the whole Synaptic Health Alliance, that some of those parties were at that blockchain summit. And what are they about and what are they up to? What do you see going on?
Well, I mean, actually, it's very, very interesting. The folks from United Healthcare and Kyle Kruver from Humana, they met up at your conference. So you kind of were the Tinder for these guys to hook up. but they've got a very interesting application, and what they came together, not only with Humana and United, but also MultiPlan, Quest Laboratory, I believe LabCorp is involved as well. Aetna is also one of the groups. They
Quest
came together.
And LabCorp. Sorry to interrupt, but Quest and LabCorp, you're getting
you're
big competitors, right?
Monster there. Competitors. They just, you know, are viciously competing with each other. And you know, the blockchain ends up creating some cooperation for these folks on dealing with something that, you know, we're all familiar with, which are the issues of provider directories. You know, you have doctors which, you know, are notorious for having the wrong addresses or wrong, you know, I've had multiple friends say, you know, they've, you know, thought that the office hours that were posted in the provider directory were correct. It turned out they were wrong, or the provider had moved actually to another location or was in another location at those hours. And there was actually one office had been closed. And the issue of just identifying a physical address and the problems that are encountered by these organizations, you know, we're not talking about millions or tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars. It's estimated to be a $2+ billion problem that is a recurring problem and it needs to be constantly updated. And what these folks are doing is they're sharing their information in order to have a better, you know, for lack of a better phrase or term, a better truth about the location, whereabouts, existence of providers and where the doctors are, what their actual physical address is, what their telephone numbers are, what insurances they may or may not take at a particular given point in time, the hours of operation. And if you think about it, the information could be extremely useful because if a physician has moved, let's say, and is no longer at a particular office, obviously, you know, that information from a Quest or a LabCorp is going to be extremely, extremely pertinent and timely because these folks are going and actually visiting the location in some cases every day, or I've known some labs that have their couriers pick up multiple times in any given day from a specific location. So obviously, if the physician is no longer at that location, being able to record that on a ledger and broadcast that information to other folks is going to be extremely meaningful for plans and people that help administer healthcare and benefits, but ultimately at some point in time when that information becomes patient facing and consumer facing, that information will be helpful to make sure that patients don't waste their time going to a location that does not have a provider. So,
claims get spit out and things like that and cause delays and sort of messing with the patient journey in certain ways as well.
Jody, you're 100% right. And that's becomes a major situation for patients. And also if, believe it or not, they still use the mail. So people actually mail claims and mail eligibility information in some cases to a location. And a mailbox, if it wasn't set up for forwarding, or even if it was, there could be multiple delays. I mean, we're seeing, some significant, not just supply chain delays of getting packages, but I know folks that are having 10 to 20 day delays on receiving mail, just going from the Philadelphia area to Florida.
So another area I thought it'd be useful to chat about is this, looking at some, what's the bleeding edge right now? And one of the companies I've been looking at and written about on our Chilmark blog is HS Blocks. So they have their Care Align platform. They basically are combining AI and blockchain in different ways where they're building out a longitudinal record. They have NLP capabilities, natural language processing that can even pull out Spanish terms from the EHR and social determinants, a lot of unstructured data, very, very high percentage of the data in an EHR that's unstructured, making that more readily available, but at the same time, integrating social determinants data into that record as well, and using blockchain as sort of the privacy consent management tool. Because, if you look at social determinants, that's another layer of privacy risks, security risks that outside of the healthcare system, and you have vulnerable populations. So doing more to protect those folks' data and privacy. I found that rather interesting. And they're also getting work in the pharmaceutical clinical trials, down in Argentina and, because of the Spanish language capabilities, things like that. So that's one of the more robust blockchain examples I've seen, but it's not all about blockchain. It's AI, a lot of different tools, financial, fintech, coupling all these pieces together. And blockchain's just one thread in the whole mix there. My impression is that's the future of a lot of this. It's not just a blockchain story, but it never really has been. But we, when it was all new and shiny, we focused on blockchain. So what are you seeing? Does that make sense, what I just described? Or, seen any other examples along those lines that, coupling AI and other tools to create something quite interesting and potentially quite valuable?
Yeah, I think the AI combined with blockchain is absolutely where this type of technology is going to shine. I've used the example, that we have folks that are now looking at AI as being a key differentiator from one institution to another. And, you know, the thought process is that, you know, we're going to see AIs rolling out from different hospital systems and providing, you know, encyclopedic type of analyses on an individual level for patients. Now, the issue ends up becoming, well, how does a patient now make, you know, it's tough enough making a decision right now with the insights that, you know, one institution might provide versus another if choosing where to have a surgery, for instance, or where to go for chronic care or cancer care, and trying to decide who or what entity is the best fit. And a ability to link, you know, blockchain as a platform to an AI that may be connected with one or more institutions, and then have a kind of an authoritative look of what makes sense, you know, because everyone's going to basically come out and say, I believe at the end of the day, they're going to be the AI is ultimately going to have a bias towards whatever institution puts it out, whether it's University of Pennsylvania or Jefferson Health here in Philadelphia or Cooper Hospital in Camden. They're all going to say, well, you should get your cancer care here. How does a patient make that decision? So, and adding the SDOH or social determinants of health makes perfect sense. I think going forward, we're still looking. I mean, we're still looking for that breakout of, you know, application or technology, you know, that is going to demonstrate that blockchain is, you know, will fulfill some of the promises, and, you know, certainly the AI coupling makes sense. You know, I keep on thinking back to, you know, everybody was sitting there, a lot of folks around the world were sitting there saying, you know, why is this internet important? This is back in the day. And the application that made everyone realize, you know, that internet can be important and having data instantly accessible can be important beyond, you know, having a transfer mode for emails or a backbone for making sure emails can move back and forth, was when FedEx introduced tracking. And there, when that came out, a lot of people would just go and constantly hit refresh on their computers to see if their packages had moved and how far along. Yeah. And that was, you know, the light that went off in people's heads. And, you know, we're still looking for, you know, kind of that FedEx moment, but, you know, certainly the example of linking AI and other patient health information to a platform makes perfect sense.
You think with the growing value of, you know, you look at real world evidence, you know, these health data economies, and then this issue of trust that's out there, whether it's with AI or how people's data is being used more broadly, even beyond healthcare. And you look back a few years ago when we were thinking about, you know, ICOs, and it's all about tokenization and how you can give people control over their data. You know, I was an executive at Health Bank during that period working on their program for their ICO. They're a health data transaction platform with a co-op business model. You know, this was all about putting together some fundamentals of trust so people could store their data and trust in the privacy of the institution, but then also be part of that health data economy and be rewarded for sharing their data into clinical research and things like that. But we ultimately did not succeed. And, you know, having great intentions of protecting consumer privacy, giving them some return on their health data, we weren't big enough. Now the big platforms, you know, that's what that, you know, it's hard to compete when you're a startup with the likes of Google and so forth. But then, you know, now there's growing suspicion of the Googles of the world as they go into healthcare and Amazon and so forth. Do you see any role, like, you know, could the health banks of the world return in some other form? Or what do you think? You know, discussions around tokenization seem to have gone a bit quiet, but now we're talking about NFTs.
I guess I'm an eternal optimist, but I guess I'm a pragmatic optimist. I agree. We were looking at tokens, I think, in the wrong way, or a vast majority of folks were looking at tokens in the wrong way. And they were just kind of applying it as an airline reward program where if you give patients will suddenly move or do something or act if they get some token. And I think we've seen that, you know, the world is of healthcare in the United States is a little bit more complicated than that. And, you know, just having a token is not necessarily the way to create a motivation for patients. So, but
getting those network effects too, that's a big part of it too. When you're a small player and you have, you're trying to get data individual by individual versus being able to hoover up millions of health records from an EHR. That's the big difference there.
Absolutely. I think, going back to the legislation that has been put out there, for instance, the government legislation, which is, really causing changes, which is the tracking pharmaceutical supply. I see those types of things as being, you know, some of the potential game changers. I think also, as we saw, the government with the Affordable Care Act was able to, you know, create massive change in the healthcare system. I think we also will see something along those lines with other legislation that's come down the pike. And, you know, one aspect, I think, is the No Surprise Act, which goes into effect January 1, 2022. I think there is a need for transparency, trust, and, you know, tracking what an individual believes they owe or what a provider and a plan are agree on the cost of a procedure and making that transparent. So I think there's, you know, that is very interesting. But, you know, hitting on something you mentioned, I think from a patient perspective, the NFT presents a very interesting point of view. And I've had a few discussions with folks about that, about the non-fungible token and how it's been used in the art world, and folks who have created it as a holder of value for various types of creations. And I kind of went through the mental gymnastics thinking about how that might apply to a person's medical record, and and how each individual is essentially a work of art in and of themselves and has their own uniqueness. And there may be fundamental things, just like any painting, for the most part, is going to have a brush stroke. Any individual is going to have certain vital signs that are, will be common. But, as more patient-generated data is added to the picture, then it becomes much more individualized. And, there could be something there. I haven't thought about, specifically how that might be able to be aggregated or monetized for the patient to benefit. But I definitely think there's something there, Jody.
On the other hand, in health IT, we have a lot of cynics, and they'll look at this and say, hey, isn't this just ICO 2.0? Because remember, Wired ran that article a couple years ago about how much is your data worth?
Yep, 17 cents.
That's the old expression. X plus 50 cents will get you a latte. Well, you wouldn't even have gotten a latte. I think the average person's data was worth 30 cents. So how do we, just for the skeptics out there, really? Do you think, how's that going to happen? What's the scenario in your head? Maybe we'll close with, in the eternal optimist mind of Ed, how could we break through from some of these kinds of structural issues where, that data of an individual, going back to, that health bank example, we had a hard time getting people to pay for that when we were accruing people one at a time, because the value of one person, might be useful if that person is in a good precision medicine center and needing an oncology treatment for that N of one in a genomic database or, some kind of omic thing. But in terms of a market and a platform, it's a very steep mountain to climb.
Yeah, Jody, haters gonna hate. And I, but you know what?
Keep experimenting and keep going on.
I would say the pragmatist in me would say, yeah, there are going to be challenges, and you know, some of the challenges, you know, may seem insurmountable, but you know, one of the things that I'm reminded, for those folks that, you know, as we head into the holiday season, you know, people say that Die Hard's a Christmas movie. I think it was Die Hard 2, where they were trying to break into a vault, and you know, the magnetic seals, or no, it may have been Die Hard 1, the magnetic seals were engaged, and they needed the electricity to be taken down for an entire city grid. And the villain basically said, I give you the FBI, because he's playing exactly by the playbook. And I would say, I give you the federal government. I believe legislation such as the Pharmaceutical Supply Chain Security Act. I believe legislation such as the No Surprise Act that is mandating transparency, and not the BS that we see on websites that are just spreadsheets of unintelligible pricing. Exactly. You know, the government is, you know, at some point in time, they're going to actually get real. And it looks like there's some actual teeth here that, you know, especially for the pharmaceutical companies, you know, they've been preparing for this day. Heck, there were companies that were formed back in 2018 when, and, you know, just preparing for 2023. I think with the No Surprise Act, I think there's the mandates and the legislation and the penalties for not doing the right thing are going to force organizations to take a much closer look at blockchain platforms and technologies. And the folks that, you know, like us, that in many times we probably felt like we were, you know, screaming in the wind in a very cold and lonely mountain. I think, you know, the government will make that mountain a little less lonely and a little less windy.
Yeah, I agree. There are definitely some very interesting use cases throughout the healthcare ecosystem. And, you know, in some ways it's very refreshing now not to have all the hype around blockchain and, you know, have a fresh look at and keep, you know, hacking away at some of these use cases. And you look at AI and federated learning, you know, for use in some clinical research and things like that. There's certainly a role for blockchain types of platforms to facilitate that and, you know, enable more granular consent management and better privacy, security controls, things like that. So definitely with you on that, despite some skepticism about some of the use cases we've been through, given the war scars I have from trying to build something around this years ago.
We all have those battle scars. And I think you and I both know where some of the bodies are buried.
All right, Ed. Well, on that note, thanks. This has been an illuminating discussion and really appreciate your time. And for our listeners, you can also look towards the Chilmark Research blog. I'll be putting together a blog post and have links to some of the companies and stories we mentioned throughout this if you'd like to, you know, pursue some of these areas in more detail. And with that, we'll close. And thank you very much, Ed.
Thank you very much, Jody. Take care. Good talking to you again.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.